Want more of the Josh Scanlon podcast?
Please. Please.
Here you go. The Josh Scanlon podcast starts right now. Welcome to podcast episode number 20, my friends. Wow. How time flies when you're having fun, and I am having fun doing these podcasts. Absolutely enjoy it. It's just a world of fun. Hopefully, it's bringing you some education as well. Got an exciting one to talk about here today. Financial planning. Wow, we cover it all. Rob Klein is my guest today. We had a long conversation. Unfortunately, the software I use only gives me an hour. So it cut the last 5 minutes off our conversation. I couldn't get it back. I'm sure there's a way to get it back, but it's still good. The meat and potatoes are in everything we talked about. It's a wonderful conversation we had with Rob Klein. Rob is out of New York City area. Medicare, long-term care, and aging in place is his practice. Klein is K-L-E-I-N, Rob Klein, K-L-E-I-N. And you definitely want to look him up on LinkedIn. I'm telling you, this guy is just a knowledgeable as anyone I've ever heard, actually, when it comes to this stuff, and including Medicare Part B, Part D, supplemental policies, the old Medicare Advantage, the changes that are happening. I mean, the thing about financial planning, and I'm just as guilty as anyone, is that financial planning, we don't talk about Medicare. We just recently got involved in Social Security, but we don't talk about Medicare that much. And yet everyone is affected by Medicare. Everyone is. And Medicare is huge if you don't do it right. And Rob shares with us some strategies on how to do it right in terms of not getting hammered when it comes to your Medicare premiums, looking at different options to reduce your premiums. And this is going to affect anybody, you know, Joe Millionaire down next door or Grandma Jones up the street. Everybody is affected by Medicare. And there's some significant penalties if you don't sign up. There's significant penalties if you do it wrong. There's huge premium increases if you do it wrong. I cannot stress enough how the financial planning industry really needs to get off on this. And again, I'm looking at myself here too, and I'm going to make a mission to study this stuff because I'm knowledgeable, but not nearly to the extent that Rob was. And I wouldn't expect to be, actually. That's his niche. He should be more knowledgeable than me. But in terms of the vast majority of financial planners, man alive, Medicare planning is definitely something that we are in single A baseball, if not rookie league, actually. And we really need to up our game. So it's going to be a good conversation. You get a lot out of this. Again, Rob Klein, look him up on LinkedIn. He did provide his phone number for contact in the blog post or in the podcast. I just, frankly, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head. So contact me and I'll get it to you. But I think we'll get a lot out of this for sure. All right. So we're going to, because Rob's from New York, we have to end with a song of the day. Aaron Lewis, Massachusetts. Aaron Lewis is, I forgot the name of the band, Stained. He did that song Stained about overcoming drug addiction. He's since gone on to be a country guy. And I'm a huge fan of Aaron Lewis, actually. I like his stuff quite a bit. As I said before, a lot of country music, pop country music, I just want to put my head into a vice and kill myself. It's horrible, horrible, especially when they're starting to incorporate some hip hop to it. It's painful to listen to. Aaron Lewis is not like that. And what I love about Aaron is that he is from the Northeast. So it just shows you, you don't have to be a good old boy from the South to like country music. Aaron Lewis is from Massachusetts. And just given that I'm from Northern New England, and if you're from Northern New England, Boston is your hometown, essentially, and there all the teams around Boston. So the guys from New York, like my man Rob here, always got to stick it to them the way we can in terms of you know, representing Northern New England, if you will, because I still – Eli Manning, that Rat Fink, and then, of course, the Yankees in 1977. Yeah. But anyway, so then again, the Yankees was it 2003. Yeah, 2003, the Yankees and the Red Sox, the ALCS. But then we remember what happened with the Sox in 2004. Oh, Mario Rivera is literally the best pitcher that's ever been made. And he was the Yankees. The guy's only like 5'8 or 5'9. It's amazing. I saw him. I don't think I saw him. Maybe I did see him in person. I can't remember. But I just, when I saw how little he was, like, dag nab. He's like a buck 40 in terms of weight. It's just a tiny guy. And that guy could not be hit. I mean, just an amazing guy. A wonderful human being, by the way. But he just played for the wrong team. But the Sox are down 0-3, not 0-3 in score, 0-3 in games, down in the eighth. Rivera is on the mound, my friends, and we won. And I'm telling you right now, then we went on to win the World Series for the first time since 1918. And I say we because I was on the team, right? But, man, you got Rivera on the mound. You're down 0-3 in the series. You're down by, I think it was a run or two. Maybe it was just a run in the bottom of the eighth. You're five outs away from again going down in flames to the Yankees like you did the previous year with stupid Brett Boone. That was an incredible, incredible moment for Red Sox fans. You'll never be outlived. That will never be outlived, more so than even the Patriots coming back against the Falcons in the last year's Super Bowl. So, that was a song that came to my mind when I was talking with Rob. Aaron Lewis is Massachusetts. There's a good video on there. I don't know if it's an official one or not, but there's a good video that kind of shows you what Northern New England looks like. It's just fantastic. Unfortunately, they don't want me there because I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe in free speech. I believe in lower taxes for sure. So even while New Hampshire is more of a tax-friendly state, a lot of the liberals are moving from Massachusetts up into New Hampshire. And frankly, Maine is becoming the state that's a lot more progressive in terms of the way we want it to be, a lot more libertarian. Massachusetts is losing it. New Hampshire is starting to lose it. But Maine is becoming the, I hate to say a libertarian paradise, but is unknown. Maine is really, with Governor LePage up there, is setting the way for the libertarian mindset, you know, live and get along. It's wonderful. And I'm proud of Maine for doing that. But again, it's just too cold. I can't go up there. So I think the farthest north I'll probably ever end up would be in Pennsylvania. But it'd be a good song of the day to wrap up this interview with Rob. I hope you get a lot out of it. Don't forget to go to Heritage Wealth Planning. On the very homepage, you'll see the retirement readiness quiz. I'm asking you to take it and tell me what you think. I'm actually pretty excited by that. I just think it's wonderful use of technology that we have out there, and give it a shot. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and give me comments on stuff you want to hear. So with that said, let me introduce Rob Klein, and we'll take it from there. Thanks, guys.
Let me introduce. So for the folks who are listening, I got Rob Klein on the horn today, and Rob and I have been connected on LinkedIn for a couple of years now, and frankly, I can't remember when or even how, but Rob's, and I'll let him kind of go into it himself, but anything that's related to health is Rob especially, and I'm kind of giving that short shift, and he'll go into a little bit more of his detail, but the financial planning realm is inconsistent at best in terms of planning for Medicare. And like Rob was just saying, a huge difference between Medicare and Medicaid. And the funny thing is, and this is why I wanted to talk to Rob today, is that everyone and their mom is going to be affected by health care, Medicare, and hopefully not Medicaid, but everyone's going to be affected by it to a huge extent of cost. And yet that's not part of the financial planning regimen. It's mind-boggling. So, Rob, just tell us who you are, where you are, what you do, and just give us the background of who. You don't have to be too quick, but just introduce yourself if you would.
Thanks for having me on here, and I just wanted to introduce myself, and you could probably tell by my accent, I'm a New York City area guy, been in the financial services industry in one shape or the other since 1998, and probably around 2008, 2009, I said, after watching Lehman Brothers collapse and everything else going on in the industry, I said, there's got to be a better way to handle this. Planning. Yeah. And I was fortunate to come across someone who was talking about Medicare and mandatory costs in retirement, and he taught me quite a bit about what's considered income, what isn't considered income, and literally how the financial planning industry was going to be tossed on its proverbial head. Yeah. Because no one is talking about Medicare, and which makes absolutely no sense because it's a mandatory cost. You cannot, since 1993, You cannot collect your Social Security retirement benefit if you do not enroll in Medicare when you are eligible. And so many people don't understand that. And I'm looking through what's out there as far as designations, and there's certain things about becoming a fiduciary, and the industry is trying to get advisors and planners to become, redefine what's a fiduciary, and yet everything all goes back to the investment side of it. And that's great if you're saving, but what do you do when you are no longer working? You no longer are covered by health insurance. You're no longer covered by your spouse or your partner's health plan. What do you do? And you realize that, hey, I got to enroll in Medicare. Oh, and it's not free.
No.
And not only is it not free, it's actually pretty pricey. And if I had the audacity to save really well when I was younger, my own savings and investing could be used against me because I could wind up paying even more, which means my Social Security check goes down because the rules say if I'm taking Social Security, I have to have my Medicare Part B deducted from my Social Security. So if the cost of my Medicare Part B goes up because I made too much money, well, then my check goes down further. It's not rocket science, and it just boggles the mind that nobody's talking about this.
No.
Well, there are a few people.
No, it's true, and it's just, but yet everyone talks about investment A versus investment B, and I'm just like, but that is such a minute detail when it comes to overall financial plan, and I will plead guilty. My Medicare knowledge is probably more than most, but it's lacking for sure, and that's a big problem. And if I don't have the knowledge, and I hate to sound conceited here, but I am a student of the game. I can only imagine the average Joe Stumpy out there with a CFP and, like you said, the CPA. What the hell? They don't know. And yet, it affects everybody, Rob. Everybody. It boggles the mind.
And one of the designations that's out there, it's put out by FI360. It's called the Accredited Investment Fiduciary.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful designation, especially for people who are working with qualified retirement plans. And the entire thing, Josh, what they're looking at is all about, time horizons, costs, fees. And these are all important subjects,
right,
things to take in mind when you are fiduciary and you are, some sort of authority or custody or decision making over someone else's money. These are important. You don't want to have your clients pay more. But what ultimately is going to wind up happening is you're going to wind up inflating the amount they have, forget to talk about the mandatory costs, and when they're ready to receive that the fruits of what you've helped them do, they're going to be looked at, hit right in the face and say, whoa, how come nobody told me this for the last 30 years?
Right?
Yep.
So go into that a little bit, Rob. Tell us about how the cost of Medicare go up simply due to your due diligence of squirreling money away in retirement accounts.
Well, so here's what happens. Medicare doesn't look just at your regular income, and this is a hard part that people, especially if you have a tax planning background, they don't understand. No one wants to pay a lot of money in taxes. So what do? We talk all about this tax deferral, or if we're an investor type, we're talking about tax-free bonds, or we're talking about qualified dividends, and all about getting so you pay less in taxes while you're working. Okay, great. But here's what Medicare has done when we modernized Medicare in 2003 through the Medicare Modernization Act. They added, in order to pay for the expansion of Medicare, which gave us Medicare Advantage plans, the Medicare prescription drug plans, Part D. Advantage plans were sometimes referred to as Part C. Nobody read the fine print. And the fine print was, to pay for all this is we're going to base what you pay for Medicare on modified adjusted gross income. Said another way, it's on your gross. And it also includes everything on line 37 on your, or above the line if you want to talk about it, line 37 on your IRS 1040, and line 8B, which is your tax-free income. So even though on page 2 of your 1040, you may legitimately lower your taxable income. You have property taxes, you have a mortgage, you gave charitable donations, you had legitimate job expenses, other types of expenses, you know, subject to the 2% floor. Maybe you had medical expenses that you got over the hump, which, depending upon what year, was either 7.5% or 10% of your AGI. All that is fine and good, and that lowers your taxable income. Medicare doesn't care. They're looking at page 1 of the 1040, which is lines 8B and line 37. And there's nothing worse than when you're sitting in front of someone, and it's happened many times, where they can legitimately get their income, if you're single, below $85,000 and under. Nothing burns more than seeing them that they're still at a modified adjusted gross income of, let's say, 90, but their taxable income is below $85,000. They're going to get hit with a 40% penalty or surcharge called IRMA, Income-Related Monthly Adjustment Amount. Here's the funny thing. All of this is public information. All of this is listed on Medicare.gov, and I believe it's even on SocialSecurity.gov. You can download a small PDF. You could also see the costs, which start at 40%, and they go up to about 220%. If you're really high income, there's an even higher amount that hits you in the next couple of years tied to the consumer price index. So this is, that's for the 500,000 and up.
Right.
Most of the mass affluent in America, they're going to find themselves, especially if you save and put money in qualified plans, and now you've reached that required minimum distribution age, 70.5, you're going to have a higher income, potentially. And that is the wrong type of income to have later in life because it could inflate your Medicare premiums.
So if you have...
And if you're...
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
So if you have $84,000 of modified adjusted gross income, and then you have just a $5,000 IRA distribution, so now you have $89,000 of MHEI, what does that do to your men? You're single, your widow. What does that do to your premiums?
So in 2018, and remember, Medicare looks back 2 years.
Oh.
So they're going to get the information from the IRS. So if we're in 2018,
right.
So the 2018 premiums were based on your yearly income in 2016. So someone who is filing an individual return, let's use a widow, for example, $85,000 or less, and if she's new to Medicare, because there's other rules, too. If you were in Medicare already and your Social Security didn't go up, but the cost of Medicare get up, there's something called the hold harmless. That's a separate discussion. But just somebody brand new coming on to Social Security, Medicare, they're going to pay $134 a month in 2018. Your example, that distribution brought them up to $89,000 in the single, that $134 jumps to $187 $1.50 a month. That's just for Part B.
Ooh.
There's a surcharge, which part of the Affordable Care Act in 2010, in order to help pay for that, a surcharge was added to your prescription drug plan. Now, keep in mind, the actual price of the drug plan is going to vary based on what plan you have, what state you're in, all of that, but there are surcharges on top of that. And what you have, so for instance, in the premiums for that, it's the base premium, and let's use your example again,
right.
$85,000 or less, they just pay whatever the plan premium is.
Right, right.
But now they have that $5,000 RMD, it adds an extra $13 on top of the plan premium each month. Now, and that's, someone might shrug that off, it's only $13, or, well, you know what, you had that $13,
right.
You had that other charge,
right?
And then, we still haven't talked about your supplemental coverage, because that's another cost, too.
I didn't even think about that. That's what happens to that.
So, it can get, it can get pretty pricey. And if you run the numbers out, like my colleagues over at Jester Financial, they built some software a few years ago, and you could project this out using Medicare's own numbers and Social Security and assume an inflation rate that Social Security says the maximum COLA and the maximum and what the Medicare Board of Trustees say. And you could say like a 55-year-old couple today, national average, they're going to get up there. It's actually higher than Fidelity's number. I mean, kudos to Fidelity for at least talking about it. I believe they just upped it to $280,000.
That's right.
Right. The numbers we calculate, they're more. They're closer to $400,000 for a married couple, age 55, wants to retire around 67, 68, and expects to live at least 20 years in retirement. So it's a little bit higher. They earn a dollar too much. It could it'll get start getting closer to about $700,000, maybe a little more. And if they earn the maximum, it could be over $1 million. Now, this includes Medicare A, which they paid into while they were working, Medicare B with the surcharges, you know, that are applicable, Medicare D with the surcharges, and right now, which still a Medicare supplement plan F. Now, F is going away, so it'll be a G plan, which will be pretty much the same thing, except you're responsible for the Medicare Part B deductible, but which is right now less than $200. But it's expensive. Where are people going to get this money from?
Medicare, the supplementals are being, so Part G will be income-based as well, Rob? Is needs-based? I mean, needs?
No, they're not going to, those aren't income-based.
Okay.
Because that's private insurance that that contracts with. But it has to be part of the equation as far as calculating what's your total cost if you want to be fully covered.
Because you're still paying premium. I got you. Okay, gotcha. Right.
That's right. And, you know, whereas what's actually part of original Medicare plus the Part D, which came out later, you know, the prescription drug plan, those surcharges, you know, like for instance, Part D, you're not mandated to pay your premium for that out of Social Security. You could cut a check to XYZ insurance company.
I generally
don't recommend that because if you forget to pay the premium and get kicked out, you're going to pay a penalty for going back in, and that penalty never goes away. So you want to do it. But even if you pay for it and you diligently pay for it, you know, every month or every year, however you're paying your premiums, if you're hit with an IRMA penalty for Part B and Part D, the IRMA penalties plus Part B are automatically taken out of your Social Security check once you're, you know, obviously receiving Social Security. So that begs the question, how do I replace this lost income? If the financial planning community is out there telling us, oh, just maximize your Social Security, or, hey, you're going to get all this money in Social Security. Well, that's not true. You're not giving the correct information to the client because you've ignored what Medicare is going to charge.
So how does Medicare, just Rob, on a supplemental policy, so we know Medicare Part B and Part D, I get that, but on stuff, what's like a typical cost for a supplemental policy? I mean, for a premium, $100 a month? I mean, I have no idea.
It depends on the amount. I always recommend people, you know, go look up on Medicare.gov or go search around on some of the you know, particular insurance companies out there. How Medicare works with the supplemental plans is they're standardized. So Part N, Plan N, Plan G, Plan F, Plan C, you know, there are all these different alphabet letters. They are all cover the same benefits. You know, no matter what company offers it, where it varies is by the premium. So I live in New York. Yeah. We're probably close for an F plan, depending upon what zip code you're up there in the upper twos, close to $300 a month. Some states will be less.
Whoa, $300 a month for supplemental plans on top of all this stuff.
Correct. Now you can go a less expensive route with the Advantage plan. And this is why these things were very popular, and it's also a big reason why the AARP was for the Affordable Care Act, because the Affordable Care Act took a lot of the money that was out of Medicare that was going to these Advantage plans. Keep in mind, the Advantage plan is basically an HMO or a PPO in some cases, where your private insurance company is basically as a partnership with Medicare, and those are based upon, you know, your zip code and which physicians, you know, take them. Now, if you're in some parts of the country, they're wonderful. Other parts of the country, you may wake up one day and realize you don't have that many doctors and providers in your network.
Yeah.
And so even though you're paying less per month, because in some cases, some of these Advantage plans have no additional costs above and beyond what your Medicare Part B premium is. So people like those. And, of course, people forget to realize that there's a deductible associated with those plans that have no premium. Many cases, I know, like some of them here in New York, it's a $6,700 deductible. And if you're pretty healthy, and if you have a family history of, you know, dying in your sleep, then maybe that's a great option to have, because your premiums could be zero to maybe $100 a month out of pocket, where, you know, above and beyond your Medicare Part B. And some of these Medicare Advantage plans offer things that original Medicare do not offer, like certain coverage for durable medical equipment. Some might have vision coverage. Some might have some dental thrown in. Not all of the Advantage plans have a prescription drug plan built in. Many do. And keep in mind, if you get your prescription drug plan through an Advantage plan, you cannot also have a Part D as well. One or the other. Either go original Medicare, or, you know, with a supplement in Part D, or you go the Advantage. And there are pros and, like I said, there's pros and cons, and that's where you work with an expert on these. My concern is, okay, now we know that this could be very expensive. My monthly income is not what my financial planner told me.
That's right. No, man, that is so spot.
And
that's frustrating. Absolutely. No.
And that is where I personally see, and I'm not an attorney. I'm not a fiduciary expert, but my brain is telling me, my gut is telling me, at some point, someone is going to figure all of this out and realize that if you're talking to people about retirement and you're ignoring a mandatory and very expensive cost that's going to lower retirement income, I would think that's a problem if you're calling yourself a fiduciary.
Well, it's even worse than that, Rob, because think about this. Not only are we not looking at Medicare and all the costs affiliated with that, but we're running these Monte Carlo projections without factoring in taxes, without factoring investment portfolio expenses as well. And that actually kicks me off to no degree. So, or every, whatever it is. So anyway, we're saying, oh, you know, Mrs. Klein, you're going to be fine with your $400,000 portfolio, because our Monte Carlo projections show that you can spend X, Y, and Z without including any of the taxes, any of the fees that you're paying, the 1% fee or whatever, and never mind the Medicare and all the other stuff that goes with it. But yet you're holding yourself as a fiduciary. So now Mrs. Klein, Grandma Klein, 88 years old, gets hit with this tax bill through the roof because she has to take more and more of her IRA out to pay her property taxes, to pay all these other things. You know, she's still paying a 1% fee to the investment advisor. Never mind, her Medicare now is going through the roof. It's absolutely, I don't even want to say disingenuous, but it's ignorance. You know, but even worse than that, Rob, is ignorance that's cloaking itself as a fiduciary. You see what I'm saying? And it's not good. It actually makes you mad. So
that's why you
go ahead.
And you can't plead it. You can't plead ignorance in fiduciary matters, because, and this is the point I keep trying to tell people, this is not new. I didn't just invent this. Okay, some of what we've discussed right here, talking to each other, goes back to 1993. Some of it goes to 2003. Mm-hmm. Some of it goes to 2010. We're in 2018.
Exactly.
Okay. This didn't just come up. And, you know, and if you want me to talk about some of the solutions on how to plan for healthcare costs, you know, the mandatory part,
yeah.
I mean, obviously there's the likely, although not mandatory, which is long-term care, which is a different discussion.
Right.
But it is kind of hand-in-hand with this, because even if you do plan to keep your Medicare premiums as low as you can, I mean, sometimes you can't, and depending upon your age, there's not enough time to plan and change things up so that it doesn't become a problem, you still got to worry about long-term care. And that's another issue that I believe that the financial planning community does not talk enough about, because there's so many different ways to solve it using a combination of strategies. But back to Medicare,
right.
how to solve this problem is, the first thing is to understand, what does Medicare not treat as income? And the first thing is health savings accounts. So if I'm working for an employer, or if I'm self-employed, and I have a high deductible health care plan for my health insurance, and I marry that with the health savings account, well, that money that goes inside my health savings account, everybody knows I can get a deduction on the money going in, and the money goes tax deferred. But what a lot of people don't realize is that if it's used for qualified expenses on the back end, it doesn't raise my modified adjusted gross income. So that's an easy one to do. It's a big deal. Now, if you are a small business owner and you have what some people like to refer to as a closely held business, you have a family business, you might want to consider doing what's called a 401H, which most, even if you talk to some CPAs and third-party plan administrators for qualified plans, most of them don't know this, or they remember hearing about it years ago, but they don't really know a whole heck of a lot about it. In simple terms, a 401H is basically a health savings account on steroids. It's done through your company's pension plan, and you can put, or a retirement plan, you could put quite a bit of money inside this, like a 401K. The downside to it is that it's non-discriminatory. So if you put it in for all the chiefs in the operation,
right.
You got to put it in for all the Indians on the bottom.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
401H.
So,
heard of that. So
right.
I mean, there you go. And again, going back to Rob, ignorance, if I'm ignorant about it, then 99.8% of my fellow CFPs are ignorant about this stuff too, guaranteed. So at 401H, but that, if you have a qualified retirement plan through a closely held business, is that what you said?
Right. Yeah, and that's where you'll see it work. So if you know you have multiple generations in a business, because the other limitation is the plan has to end when the corporate plan ends. So if you know that you have baby boomer owners, they're in their upper 60s, early 70s, they know they have their adult kids are in it, maybe they have some grandkids that are working their way through high school, and they're going to wind up in this family business. This may be a great thing because you know there's continuity of the business.
Absolutely.
Doesn't work for everybody, but it does have its place. Another option is the hated, I say hated because there are some people who hate it, cash value life insurance.
Oh, I can't believe you're saying life insurance. That's evil.
That's right. I know. So, but structured correctly, if you have a plan that's structured correctly, the cash values, which would be taken out in a loan, those are off the grid from the taxman. They're also off the grid from Medicare. So again, someone who's 60 doesn't have a lot of time to start a cash value program. But someone who's younger and might say, you know what, I don't really need this for death benefit protection. I like the concept that I could have some money that's maybe some guarantees if I'm using whole life, or certain guarantees that come with certain types of universal life contracts. And it's a way for me to accumulate cash and potentially use it later. Well, that's off the grid.
The life insurance, Rob, does that have to be owned by the corporation or anything? Or can I just own it? Josh owns, you know, cash value life insurance, whole life, you know, and, you know, let's say I'm 35 years old, good shape, wake up, I'm 65, I have $750,000 cash value. I can borrow against that
which is off the grid for Medicare in terms of the deciphering my premiums.
Yeah, no, it could be individually owned.
Oh.
So that's not, so now that becomes a really, now you start understanding why cash value insurance, you can make the case why it belongs in your portfolio because there's you know, potential later. The next thing is another hated thing by the so-called experts,
right.
And that's annuities.
Yeah, right.
But not all annuities work for keeping Medicare premiums down. It has to be the type of annuity, I mean, in a perfect sense, it has to be one that allows you to annuitize with non-qualified money because you get that exclusion ratio. So those who understand these concepts, exclusion ratio means, as just so your listeners know, that's the amount that the IRS views as return of premium. So you're not taxed on it. So you're only taxed on what they consider earnings. Well, a lot of financial advisors who work with annuities, they know this in the context of income tax. But what they don't know is that it also works with the amount that is excluded from income tax is also going to be excluded from the Medicare means testing. So that's a twofer. And now you've just created a pseudo pension for somebody in a world where we don't have pensions.
But just a second on that. So we got a thought. So an annuity, now folks, we're talking about you actually taking a monthly income as a guaranteed income, like the traditional annuity, what it's supposed to be. So Rob, you got $1,000 a month as income from your insurance company, of which $600 is return of premium and $400 is gain. So it's a 60-40 ratio. That $600, which is return, is not included in your income tax or in your Medicare means testing either. Is that correct?
That's correct. So, okay. So for some people, it's a great program. Now, even if you don't annuitize the annuity,
okay,
and you just are taking out regular payments, you're going to be taxed on that. It's going to be fully taxable, fully part of the MAGI calculation for Medicare premiums, but that's not completely bad because that may be the difference that makes up for your reduced Social Security benefits because of Medicare. So, if drawing that income keeps you under that $85,000, then it's not a problem. You'll just know that it's fully part of the taxable income. Doesn't hurt you for Medicare. And if you go up one bracket to the first part of the first IRMA bracket, well, you know what? It may still keep you from not going up to the second bracket, replaces the lost Social Security. So it's not a complete disaster if you wind up in an annuity, wind up using an annuity for retirement that where you don't annuitize.
But it does open up options on the annuity side for people who have annuities, non-qualified annuities, for instance, and they're looking at large potential for higher Medicare means testing, whatnot. The idea would be to look at your taxes now, maybe start annuitizing now, maybe start taking money out now while you're well under the $85,000 threshold. It's really about just planning, Rob, saying at the end of this year, what is your tax bracket? What is your MAGI? Does it leave us space to get up to, in terms of tax planning, tax bracket management? We have $25,000 until we hit the next tax bracket. Maybe we should start filling that tax bracket up so that way come, when we're 5 years from now, we're not automatically in that next tax bracket. You know what I'm saying? So it just opens up the corridor to really start getting dirty in terms of planning for Medicare premiums on top of taxes, taxable income as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll take it even one step further because I casually mentioned long-term care planning.
Yeah.
If your state allows, because these aren't available in every state, there's something what's called the Pension Protection Act of 2006. Well, there's a lot of benefits and protections in there for people with qualified retirement plans. But buried in there is a benefit for those concerned about long-term care planning, because if your annuity qualifies under the Pension Protection Act of 2006, distributions from that annuity for qualified long-term care expenses are not taxable. So to use your example, You open up the planning portion, you're sitting with a client, and the client has an annuity they bought years ago,
right,
a low basis type of thing. They know if they cash out the annuity, they're going to get hit with tax charges. Maybe they don't want to annuitize it. You could say, well, here's an option. You could do a tax-free transfer to an annuity with that meets the Pension Protection Act of 2006. You leave the thing alone. You let it continue to grow tax-deferred. It still can pass on to your heirs of your choosing, you know, just like any other annuity will, or most annuities will anyway. But here's the benefit. Should you need long-term care, now you could take money out of that contract and not pay any taxes on it.
And not subject to Medicare means testing either.
Correct. So that would be a huge,
huge,
huge benefit.
That is huge. Yeah. No. Keep going.
That's just another planning thing. And depending on the state and depending on the carrier, there's not that many carriers that offer these, but the ones that do, you could sometimes get a joint protection on there for long-term care, and they work a little differently how they are. Just to keep it simple, there's some leverage component to it. So that $200,000,
right,
say, in that annuity might be $400,000 or $600,000 available on one or two lives over the course of several years, and you can choose how you want to spend that if you need the care. That's not the contract, just be clear, that's not the contract value. That's only if you trigger the long-term care benefits. So it's just got to throw that in there.
Real quick, on the annuities. So on the annuities, do they state, let's just say, because I've come across this a million times on Sunday, a guy buys an annuity in, let's just say, 1997. It hasn't grown that much because the fees have just weighed them down, but it has grown. I mean, there is a pretty significant unrealized gain in there, a taxable event if you were to just take a large distribution. So it's pre-Pension Protection Act. Now, so let's just say we look at transferring that to another annuity because you might have long-term care expenses. Do the other annuities say that this qualifies for the tax deduction or the tax-free thing, or how do you know? You see what I'm saying?
Well, you would know because when you work with a competent advisor, they would know who does a lot of long-term care planning. They would match you up with a contract that has that benefit in there, so that you would, because otherwise you're just moving it for the sake of moving it,
right?
And that opens up a whole other problem, and that's not the right thing to do for the client. If there's an actual bona fide benefit that solves a problem that the client's trying to solve, well, now you have a legitimate reason to show the client to hear. Here's a way where we could make these gains not a problem for ordinary income tax should you need long-term care. If you never need the long-term care, well, then it's going to follow the same rules as what you had before.
I just got to say, it's fundamental about financial planning. And I'm just kind of thinking out loud here, Rob. Just bear with me just a second. But in the back of my mind, of all the clients I've dealt with, I can't tell you how many people want to leave their annuities alone because of the taxable consequence of pulling money out. And instead what they'll do is they'll take distributions from IRAs to match whatever expenses on long-term care. And I'm just using this for an example. But what you're saying right there is that there is a better strategy. I mean, you're going to have to take your RMDs, your required distributions. That's no getting around that. But at the end of the day, instead of doubling or tripling your IRA distributions to meet your long-term care needs, you can put your old annuity that didn't qualify under Pension Protection Act into another annuity that does, not be subject to any kind of income tax there, start pulling money out in order to qualify for long-term care. And again, we don't need to get into all the what qualifies, not this stage, but if there is a qualified long-term care expense, you pay for tax-free income tax on top of that free from Medicare means testing, as opposed to pulling more and more out of your IRA, which does the exact opposite. It increases your income tax, increases your Medicare premiums as well. That's a huge financial planning concept that gets – I mean, I know I've overlooked that. I know for a fact. And again, that's significant up there. Yeah, go ahead.
It's beautiful. And I've presented it actually to some, you know, financial planners, and at the end of the day, they like it, but at the end of the day, a lot of them don't do it because in their mind, they don't want to see the client take that money out of the accounts that they're managing and putting in, you know, planning for long-term care. And my reply to that is very simple. I said, what do you think is going to happen when there's no long-term care plan in place? All of your assets now, or all your clients' assets now, are now up for grabs to be used. So it's, you know, it's, and you didn't lose, the client didn't lose the money. The money still is earning money inside that annuity. Call it a fixed income allocation. And, you know, and then, you know, adjust how you manage their other money. And in a few years, if there's no long-term care event, you know, that you could, the amount that you have under management would grow back up anyway. And now the client has even more protection. It's just, it's mind-boggling.
And then, going back to the life insurance too real quick, is I've heard a million times on Sunday too, and having raised my, cut my teeth through Vanguard, that I always want to buy term and invest the rest. And I just got to say, Rob, that makes sense on paper. Absolutely makes sense on paper. When it comes to actual the structuring it, though, and I just want to be clear here to anyone who's listening, life insurance is not evil. It's inanimate. It's neither good nor bad. It just is. Life insurance used correctly is a wonderful tool. And I'll just use this example real quick. I'll never forget. I was always against permanent life insurance until I came across this guy. He had like $3.5 million of cash value. It was getting 5.85% a year guaranteed as an interest. And his cost of insurance was so, because he took it out when he was in his 30s. His company dumped $100,000 a year in there for 10 years when he was in his 30s. Now, Rob, he's 65 years old. I mean, the thing was just a smoking plan. He was getting 5.85%, tax-free, completely liquid. At his death, his wife was going to get like $6 or $7 million of tax-free life insurance, or if he wanted to, he could spend the whole freaking thing, basically, you know, if he borrowed against it. But you cannot tell me there's no investment that outperformed that, because 5.85% tax-free in his tax bracket was the equivalent of almost 10% a year in an aggressive portfolio, and life insurance in this case was 100% guaranteed. So, again, that's not everybody. That's, you know, maybe that's 20% of the population who has life insurance that will get that kind of benefit. But it can be valuable, that's for sure.
Oh, for sure. And then there are two more things that help keep the Medicare thing. I'm going to save the best one for last because it works into the work you do with your clients. The second to last one is home equity, and in particular the type of home equity. That works really well for this. It's someone using a reverse mortgage. I know FINRA, which is one of the regulators out there, they soften their stance on it. They used to say you could only use this as the last resort. Well, if you're at the last resort, no lender is going to give you a loan. Anyway, they've changed that, and they, you know, they said, you know, just to be, you know, they want you to think about, you know, a lot of the due diligence behind it. Still, most investment firms, they prohibit their advisors from discussing this because they're worried about the past abuses. Okay, that being said, here's the reality of how it works. Home equity is off the grid. When you take out that home equity and spend it, it's off the grid for taxes, off the grid for Medicare. Okay, so some of these new reverse mortgage products, what they've done, come out over the years, is you have a reverse line of credit. Couple 62, let's use that example as an example. They don't need any money today out of their equity. They open this up. The lender tells them exactly how much they can borrow out of their equity at each year in the future. So now you've essentially built another cash value that you can use at a future date. And here's what's great about it is that now becomes part of your long-term care planning, maybe your age in place, maybe to offset because your Medicare premiums got really expensive and now you want some money for some bills. That's, you know, that's a great option.
And that's free of income and Medicare means testing taxes as well.
Right. So they're not for everybody. You got to be very careful. And you got to check, you know, and people who deal with, you know, advisors out there, they, you know, many times your advisor may not be allowed to even talk to you about this.
No.
But these are things that again, looking at the rules that Medicare and Social Security have, and, you know, in the IRS, this is an option for some people. And there are other types of reverse mortgages out there. I just gave one as an example. And again, conversation for another time, conversation for an expert who deals in these things. I just bring it up because it is one of the things that is very Medicare friendly.
And very much overlooked too, Rob. I mean, I was never allowed to talk about reverse mortgages at my previous firm. I'll tell you that right now. I worked there for 10 years because, A, they didn't sell them. B, they're ignorant about them. And C, they just, you know, again, ignorance is not bliss. But reverse mortgages are getting more and more street cred when it comes to the financial planning industry. And I imagine 5 years from now, it'll be just another tool in our tool belt. But until then, they're not. So, folks, if you have clients or if you're, you know, what is it, 62 is that the minimum age to qualify? Is that what it is?
Right.
Okay.
Pretty much in almost every state. And I'll just add one thing, build on what you're saying. You're probably right about the 5 years because right now, about being more universally recognized, right now the American College for Financial Services in Pennsylvania, they're doing a tremendous amount of research on this.
Yeah.
They're very public about what they've done. They have some people who have doctorates, CFPs, really looking at this and saying this like, oh, my God, there's a tremendous amount of planning. And again, not for everybody, but in many cases it works really well.
Absolutely.
The last thing to use, and you'll know this because I've seen you and I've heard you talk about this, Roth IRA.
As you say, Roth IRA.
Roth account.
I knew it.
And the Roth. And it doesn't just have to be the Roth IRA that people put $5,000, $6,000, whatever, in a year. It could be a Roth 401k, Roth 403b, Roth 457, any type of Roth-type account. And the beauty of this is, under current rules, and of course Congress could change this, it's off the grid from the Medicare calculation.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm sitting there looking at this, and especially now with this new tax plan that came out at the end of last year.
Yep.
Okay, many Americans are not going to itemize, and you're going to have many Americans who are, based on what they're earning, they're really not going to be federal income. State taxes is a different story, but at least on the federal side, many of them are not going to have a problem with federal income taxes above and beyond what's already deducted from their check. So why would you want tax deferral, which ultimately is going to be on the grid later? Why not just start off with Roth and use the, and if your employer offers the Roth 401k, use the Roth 401k. Now keep in mind, if your employer does match contributions, that the employer is taking the deduction on that, you're not going to want to put that part in the Roth. You're going to probably want to put that in the traditional 401k side because that's, you know, to handle the employer match, but your contributions out of your check, you might want to have go to the Roth side and never have to deal with this again.
I cannot tell you how, I tell you, that is one of the most underutilized methods of planning there is, a Roth IRA. And it's funny because, folks, before we got on before this, Rob and I were talking about a CPA he was debating, let's put it that way, on social media, talking about Medicaid versus Medicare, and the CPA was ignorant about the two distinctions. It's almost the same thing with IRAs, tax deferrals, and tax-free, that everyone just, I don't know what it is, by training, I suppose, but everyone says kick the tax can down the road, even if down the road is a tax bomb that you're walking right into. For some reason, it's not just CPAs, it's like everybody. Don't pay a penny more tax today, pay it for later, even if it's going to cost you $10 later. It's worth saving the penny today, and that's absolutely bad, bad, bad planning. And, Rob, you hit it on the head, too. Why defer stuff you're not deferring? You're not getting a tax benefit a lot with the new standard deductions. And so if you're not getting a tax benefit, all you're doing is putting that out for, it drives you up the wall. It's insane.
And there's a lot to do, and again that goes when you're sitting down with, you know, with the types of clients you're working with. So let's say you take someone older than the young person I described. Now you have someone who's, let's say, 10 years away from retiring.
Right.
That's a great that's a great discussion to have. The only thing, you know, to convert traditional Roth, the only thing I will caution people about is be careful on your age. Because remember, depending upon when you're going to go on to Medicare, Medicare looks back 2 years. So even though converting is the right thing to do for tax planning and for other types of planning, the conversion actually is part of your modified adjusted gross income. So you don't want to do a huge conversion when you're 63. But if you're 53 and you know you're in some prime earning years and now you got this new tax law, have that conversation with your financial advisor and your CPA and say, okay, put me on a plan where I can start converting traditional IRA, traditional 401k, and start slowly converting that to the Roth side. I'll pay the tax today,
right,
and get it out of the picture.
Now, if you do, the Medicare is just year by year. So if you have a big year this year, but then no income the following year, the Medicare premiums will spike for the 2 years out, but then the following year they'll go back down, right? Because it's year by year they adjust it.
Yes and no. They're technically, and you'll forgive me because I don't have them all in my head, but there are about seven reasons that Medicare will adjust the premiums down. So if you get divorced or, I think there's one if you had a problem with your business. There's about seven criteria where Medicare will look at it. You could petition, it's called appeal, Medicare, and say, look, my income really changed. Okay, and I'm not going to have the same modified adjusted gross income anymore. I shouldn't have those higher premiums. And I have heard cases of people being very successful in getting them lowered. And that also sometimes happens with with divorce, because depending on the alimony and that picture, it could work in their favor. Of course, if part of their divorce settlement was a whole bunch of qualified money, because you got a good chunk of your ex-husband's 401k. I've seen this happen. Ex-husband was a radiologist.
Yep.
Exactly. Okay. There was a lot of money in there, and you know what? She could appeal, but her R&Ds that she's going to have to take soon from all that qualified money are just going to bring her right back up. So her case is not going to work. But for people who weren't married to a surgeon before, and just some, guy, no offense to him, but you're either A, not going to have the problem to begin with, or you would be able to petition it down. So that answers your question. But it is an appeal process. I'd like to say out of the ones that they say, yes, we will lower them on, goes through without a snag, but we're dealing with the government here.
Right.
It doesn't always fly through right away. it can happen. So that's why it's very important, as I remind people, pay attention to your age. So if you like the Roth concept, do it earlier. If you're really young, just start off with it.
Absolutely. It's interesting, though, with the appeal, you actually have to appeal the federal government to pay them less. So just think, at the end of the day, like you said, Rob, most likely they'll grant you the appeal, but you're still appealing to the feds on something that should be automatic and is not. And so if you are doing that at 63, a major Roth conversion, there will be a pain point for you at 65 when you sign up for Medicare, and then 66... If you've converted everything over and it's no longer your taxable income, you still got to go back and say, hey, guys, revisit this. And, again, will they do it probably, but that's not the same as being automatic, which is interesting.
Oh, yeah, and I just pulled this up just if your listeners want more information for it. It's on it's actually listed on the HHS.gov website about the appeals process for Part B. And I knew about death of spouse and marriage, divorce or annulment, work reduction, work stoppage, loss of income for an income-producing property. So if somebody had a whole bunch of apartment buildings and that was burned to the ground and you wound up settling with the insurance company, that might work, certain types of pension income. But there's also situations that happen to do with inaccurate tax data. Right. The IRS was given the wrong data, or Social Security provided the wrong data. But what's not in there is someone saying, hey, I converted to a Roth 1 year and I don't have that anymore, or I took that fat payout, had that big severance package, okay, that they're not going to work with you on. So
like that, age is critical here. All right, Rob, we are up against an hour, and I know you got other things to do. I tell you, man, we'll get you back on. This is absolutely fantastic. How do people get a hold of you, Rob? What do you do? How do you work with clients? I mean, are you only in New York? Or just tell us about your business and how people can work with you, man.
I mean, I work in a few states, working on hopefully one day being nationwide, but right now I'm in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Florida, Pennsylvania. Certain services I do in South Carolina. The best way to get a hold of me, I'll give my number. I have a toll-free number.
Yeah.
It's 888-383-2724. And drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. And, we can talk about this if you are in one of those states. And, Josh, I'd love to keep talking to you more and more about this because I love dealing with other professionals who really get this major problem out there.
No, absolutely. And I'll make sure you email that number. I'll put in the show notes, too, and in your contact, just any contact that you have. So the issue here, folks, is I just want to point out, and then I'll let you get on to your day, Rob, is that just because someone's credentialed, CFP, master's degree, CFA, all this stuff, doesn't mean, this is going to sound rude to my colleagues, but it doesn't mean they know anything. It just doesn't. It doesn't mean they don't. It's just at the end of the day, the issues that we have to contend with are real, that you're all going to be facing. And think about it, too, just like this. Rob's in New York State. I'm in Georgia. It costs a heck of a lot more to live in New York State than it does in Georgia. So if I'm a widow in New York, I'm probably going to be up against that $85,000 threshold a lot sooner than someone living in Georgia, just because of the nature of the income up there relative to the people down here. And so it's not state-specific in terms of how much more your Medicare premiums cost. You could be right in New York City in Manhattan, still $85,000. And you could be sitting there in, I don't know, Topeka, Kansas, still $85,000 to pay more in Medicare premiums. And that's a big deal. And anyway, Rob, this
stairs and listen to the nighttime as the daylight fades away. It's such a haunting and familiar tune. When I hear it in the distance, I can say that I'm Massachusetts, where my daughters and my wife, they wait for me, all alone. But the truth is, it's where I always am, it's where I long to be, because I'm home. Shore is where my father lives. I wear my Red Sox hat around the world with pride. But the Berkshires are where my heart is. And when I see them in the distance, I could cry, because I'm home. Massachusetts, where my daughters and my wife, they wait for me. Of me and you, they keep getting older, time keeps going by, to think about it makes your daddy wanna cry, so I just pass the sign that welcomes me to Worthington. Established long before this country came to be, a place that hasn't really changed with time, the way this country that I love it used to be, because I'm home in Massachusetts. And my wife, they wait for me all alone. But the truth is, it's where I always am, it's where I long to be, because I'm home in Massachusetts. Every day, and where my friends, they don't treat me different. It's where my family is, it's where I'll always stay, because I'm home.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.